We have seen immigrants and refugees being rounded up. We don't know how many have been rounded up. We don't know how many have been deported already. This has happened in the United States as well. In this country, we have had immigrants, we have had refugee applicants have been charged, accused of terrorism. They have been accused of terrorism. They have been rounded up. They have been arrested. The most famous case was the 21 Pakistanis in Ontario. They were arrested. And in the end, they were charged with nothing more than minor immigration violations. In the meantime, they had been branded as terrorists in the media. Their reputations, their careers had been completely destroyed. In fact, there was a long interview with one of the doctors whose fiancé's parents, after seeing his name in the newspapers, after seeing him being associated with terrorism, had broken off the engagement. His family didn't want to have anything to do with him. His profession as a career, as a doctor, his future career as a doctor had been completely destroyed. Now, this is happening, and it is extremely discriminatory to the people that it is happening to, especially when after being arrested, after being defamed in this kind of way, that there is nothing that they have been charged with except minor immigration violations. This is devastating for the people that this has happened to. But there's also a larger thing going on. This is a message to all immigrants and refugees. This is a message to all of us that this could be your fate. This could be your fate. When I spoke out against the war, the RCMP announced that they were investigating me for a hate crime. They didn't proceed with it because I was lucky enough that I was a public figure and I ended up having a lot of support from people. But this is not just something that is targeted at the individuals. It's very important to understand the larger message here, that this could happen to any one of you that steps out of line. And we have to be vigilant. We cannot think that just because we are not individually or personally targeted, that we are fine. We cannot think that. Because if any one of us is targeted, everybody, all of us, could be targeted soon after. And that is something that we have to remember really clearly and really very well. So I guess, thank you. Thank you. I guess my message is that what was initially thought of as a backlash, an initial backlash against Muslims and those who look like Muslims, has turned into a much long-term problem that we are facing of having been now constructed as the biggest threat to the nation's security. And you know, we have terms that are being introduced into our everyday language, sleeper cells, right? Who had heard this word being used popularly? Right? In Ontario, the Attorney General announces that there are sleeper cells in Ontario. Now, this is very interesting. The way sleeper cells are being defined is immigrants and refugees who've gone underground for 20 years waiting for the right day to come out and attack. Right? 20 years. What does that mean? It means immigrants who have been in this country for 20 years are now under suspicion. Right? We could all be potentially part of sleeper cells. And this is becoming part of people's common sense world. This is becoming part of people's everyday language. And this is going to have very, very far-reaching consequences for us, for our rights, for our entitlements, and for those of our children, many of whom are born here and who are being raised here. And this is going to have long-term consequences for them. This is what I think has been the impact of 9/11. We have the construction of the good Muslim, and the good Muslim is the one who will try and convince the nation. I'm a good immigrant. I waited in line. I support your imperialist wars against Afghanistan, against Iraq, and wherever you will go next. That is the good Muslim today. The one who will support America's empire building. The one who will support the Canadian state's participation in these imperialist aggressions, that today is the good Muslim. And the one who will stand up rights, who will stand up for the right to dissent, who will stand up against the rights that are being taken away from us today, is the bad Muslim. And I think we have to be very, very careful in our communities not to be played off in this way, not to be turned against each other. I think that is going to be incredibly important to build solidarity, political solidarity in our communities, to continue to fight for the rights that people who came to this country, immigrants, our predecessors, who fought for us to have today, that we continue to build solidarity and not play into the hands of this good Muslim, bad Muslim. The media has really misrepresented Islam, the Muslim community, and potential terrorists in this country. The Muslim man has been represented as ultra-macho, fanatic, fundamentalist, irrational. The Muslim woman, a victim, his victim, a dupe, his dupe, if she's going to support him. And the good Muslim woman is the one who wants to be saved by the West, the one who will support the saving of Afghan women, right? By America, by Canada. That today is the image of the good Muslim woman. And it is really important for women from our communities to stand up and challenge these stereotypes. It is really important because they are disempowering for us. Today, if we look at who the image of the Muslim woman is in the media, I would not be read as a Muslim woman. The image that is being created is the woman who is completely veiled. She is the authentic Muslim woman. And I think that in our communities, we have to bring the knowledge that we have that Muslims are extremely diverse. We come from very, very different cultural traditions. We practice the religion in very, very different ways. There is no monolithic Muslim man. There is no monolithic Muslim woman. And we have to bring that diversity to our work when we're building our solidarity. That has to be part of the work that we do. So I just want to say a few words in closing about how the government has continued to respond in racializing us in particular kinds of ways and racializing us in a way that legitimizes us having lesser entitlement, lesser rights, and a lesser citizenship than other Canadians. And I want to use two examples. One is Maher Arar. And Maher Arar's case showed that even when you have citizenship, and even when you come from one of the professional classes, and even when you have a professional career, that is not enough to save you. That is not enough to save you. The Canadian government, there's an inquiry going on, but it has been alleged that they worked hand in glove with the Americans to turn Mr. Arar over and have him sent to Syria. What that shows is that our citizenship is something that we cannot take for granted. So if we think that we are citizens and we are safe, and the landed immigrants are not safe, and maybe the refugees are not safe, but we are citizens and we are safe, Maher Arar's case taught us that that is not the case. That we can have citizenship legally, but we will still be treated differently by the state. That is the lesson that Maher Arar's case has taught us, and we cannot forget that. Because there are great divisions in our communities between those who are citizens, those who are landed immigrants, and those who are refugees. We should realize that our rights are interconnected, they're completely tied together. And if we think that those of us who are citizens are safe, that is a mistake. I want to give you another example of the Canadian state's treatment of Muslims and their unequal citizenship. You will remember that after the 9/11 attacks, I think it was the year 2002, the United States announced that for visitors who were going to be traveling in the United States from certain countries, most of them from the Middle East, would be fingerprinted and they would be photographed when they entered the United States. This was an announcement that came from there. The Canadian government responded by issuing a travel advisory. The United States regulations would at that time say they would not distinguish between Canadian citizens from those countries, immigrants who had been from those countries and were now Canadian citizens, anybody who was born in those countries would be fingerprinted and photographed regardless of their citizenship, whether they were Canadian citizens or not. This is what the United States said at that time. The Canadian government responded by issuing a travel advisory, right? And the travel advisory warned Canadian citizens who had been born from those countries not to travel to the United States unless it was absolutely necessary. Now, the Canadian government really angered Washington when it did that. Apparently, it's the first time that a travel advisory has been issued here in Canada regarding travel to the United States. But it was, and the Canadian government, John Chrétien was prime minister at that time, took a lot of heat for it. And people said, see, Canada is a multicultural nation, we will stand up to the United States. But it is interesting that the Canadian government issued the warning not to all Canadian citizens not to travel to the United States, which would have been the right response. That would have been the response if everybody had equal citizenship in this country. The Canadian government would have issued that to the entire citizenry, and not only to Canadian citizens who were born from those countries. And so I think this signals very, very clearly that the state certainly is willing to accept two-tier citizenship, to accept this racism against those who look like Muslims, and to institutionalize it. Again, people of color have had to fight very hard in this country for access to citizenship rights. This is something that we cannot afford to have taken away from us. And this is what the stage is being set for. So I think it is very important to recognize that how constructing Muslims as the biggest threat to the nation has become a long-term project which is going to legitimize unequal access to citizenship, unequal access to the entitlements of citizenship for us, even at the time when our labor is needed in this society. Immigration is needed in this society. The birth level in Canada has been declining. It's below population replacement level. And so immigration is a fact in this country. But what is happening is that different groups of people will be given different citizenship rights, different access to citizenship, and we have to make sure that we do not lose the rights that we have fought for, people before us have fought for. And just in closing, when we're building our solidarity movements, when we're building alliances, it is very important to recognize that we live in a country that was colonized, that we live on land that was taken away from Aboriginal people, that Aboriginal peoples have been fighting for 500 years for their sovereignty, for justice, for equality in this society, and we cannot become complicit and forget that this is the land of Aboriginal people. More time than I was allocated, and I apologize for that. So there's just one message in closing. Become members of the Palestinian Community Center, support all of their activities, and go out on each of the demonstrations and protests that they have organized. And they have worked very, very hard to preserve our rights. So support the center with all your heart. Thank you.